Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hello and welcome to the show, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Jackie Cation. You know the websites, JackieCation.com, DorkForest.com, TheDorkForest.com, FamilyPetAncestry.com, and AllThingsComedy.com. That is my podcast network that I'm on with Bill Burr and Al Madrigal and a million other great podcasts if you're ever looking for a pod. That, by the way, is where my hour special, you can download it for $5 at AllThingsComedy.com/JackieCation, all lowercase for some reason. And you can get that hard copy-wise on JackieCation.com in the merch page, on the store page. There's all the CDs, all the t-shirts, and a hard copy of the DVD. This will make an excellent Horcrux, which is available, or you can have the DVD or the CD if you like hard copies. And there's deals if you get more than one CD or more than one CD-DVD combination. And the t-shirts are all American-made, union-made, so they run a little big. Know that in your heart. And there's merch. On also JackieCation.com, there's a donation button. Feel free to use the donation button. If you enjoy the program, I'd love it if you gave me $100 a year. And if you can't, don't worry about it. But you can buy some merch if you like. You can use the Amazon banner on JackieCation.com. And that just brings you to Amazon. And then when you order from Amazon, I get a little kickback. That's a way to support the show. You can also talk up the show on Twitter and Facebook. You can follow me on Twitter, at JackieCation. And at Dork Forest Pod, by the way, is the Dork Forest podcast Twitter. That's where my Periscope is linked to. I'm going to try to change it over to Jackie Cation. I just didn't know what it was. So I was like, well, let's put it on the thing I never use. So I'm on Periscope and I'm on Bandcamp. That's right. I'm thinking about doing some of the live shows cost me money. So I'm thinking about putting live shows on Bandcamp for $2. And then if you want, you can download the live shows. I don't know that I'll do it, but I have a Bandcamp page, and you can, if you'd like, get a couple of stories that I told for $2 or $1 each, and check that out. I believe it's thedorkforest.bandcamp.com. Let's do the credits. Patrick Brady, going to fix this audio. Vilmos fixes my website, JackieCation.com, and Mike Rickberg composed and sang the theme to The Dork Forest with his girlfriend, Sarah Cohen. Mike will sing his words to the Mexican Hat Dance at the end of this show. And want to come and see me do stand-up comedy? Check my show page on JackieCation.com. But this is the longest thing ever, so let's get out of it and into the show. Hey, Rangers, this week's sponsor is Gen Con. It's a board game convention in Indianapolis, Indiana. Their slogan is, and this is true, the best 4 days in gaming. This year, it's July 30th through August 2nd in Indianapolis, Indiana. The badges are discounted $10 prior to June 14th, and you can get them online at gencon.com, G-E-N-C-O-N.com, or via will call, pick up at the door. There's like 16,000 events and 350 gaming companies on site. There's literally something for every gamer. Andy's gone 2 years in a row. He's going again this year. He'll do play testing. And everybody play tests new games. You can meet people and play old games. You can just meet people. The greatest thing about this convention is that more people weren't standing in line to go to a panel. This is a convention where people are actually playing games. And it's really, really fun. They're expecting a little more than 60,000 gamers this year, making it the largest, longest running game convention in North America. And it's just really fun. It's GENCON.com. I'm going to go. There's going to be a live Dork Forest. It is July 30th through August 2nd. Come and play games, you guys. Hey, it's Jackie Cation. I am in my living room with Steve Maison.
Maison.
Welcome.
You got it. You nailed
to the program.
I didn't. It's so great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Sure, no problem. Jackie. By the way, stand-up comic Steve Maison, M-A-Z-A-N.com, and it's Steve_Maison on Twitter. And his dates and stuff, go see him do stand-up comedy all over the place.
Yeah, come check it out.
There you go. That's because he talks out of his joke hole, and that is
that's
ideal.
Where it all comes out of that hole.
All comes out of your joke hole. It
goes into your joke receiver holes.
Exactly. Receiver hole. Ooh, very nice.
That's my
for some reason,
my ear.
I call them ear balls.
Oh, earballs.
I have some free time in my brain box. Yeah. Huh? I got all kinds of body part talks.
I like earballs, yeah.
Yeah, I got some free time. In other news, you enjoy... Yes. Well, first of all, you've done this documentary.
Yes, I have a documentary.
And it was, I want to be on Letterman a lot. Please let me be on Letterman, is what it's called.
Yeah, long title at first.
At first.
And we're like, that's a little wordy for people to remember. What
dying
if they get
to
around
be on
they
can't
find it.
And
dying to do Letterman.
Dying to do Letterman. Oh, there we go, alliteration.
Dying.
And it's on Hulu. Is it on free on Hulu or
it's,
Hulu
yeah,
Plus?
It's free on Hulu. You can get it. It's if for the past year plus, it's, you know, it was iTunes.
Okay.
Amazon Prime, showed to movie theaters for a certain amount. We did DocuWeeks, which is the big place where documentaries play. We're invited to play as part of that in New York and L.A.
But now they can just go to Hulu.
It was even on planes. But now you can just go to Hulu. You don't have to go fly to see this movie.
Thank God.
It's free on Hulu. So
right. And so you have been doing stand-up comedy since the dawn of man.
Yes, yes.
And you were like, I would like to be on David Letterman.
That was my goal, was to one day get on Letterman. And
then you got cancer. And you're like, well, TikTok, people.
Yeah, all of a sudden I was like, I was waiting for. You're probably guilty of that, right? I mean, we're all as you really just
none of us are immortal.
No, we're all guilty of dying, definitely at some point. Or you will be found guilty of dying at some point. But I think in my comedy career, I was just you kind of like make a name for yourself and things happen. That's how it's supposed to,
but I don't think that's actually how it works. What you do is stand-up comedy forever if you're lucky.
Yes.
And then you die. Like, yeah. Jay, do you know, is it James Wendell Walker? Is it, John Wendell Walker? He's the Seattle guy.
John
Wendell Walker. And he was on, it's a really good shoe. It's the 50s.
Yeah, it's
and,
Sullivan.
Ed Sullivan Ed show. Sullivan. And, that was all he ever did.
Yeah.
Like, he was never on anything
else. Didn't do anything else, yeah.
And all he does is triple runs and Yoda runs and all this stuff. And you're like, is it going to be, am I going to be living the wrestler well into my 70s?
Right, exactly.
And, and I think that is a valid career.
Yeah, sure.
When you do stand-up comedy, there is a certain point where, I mean, if you're going into stand-up comedy because you want to be famous,
yes,
please choose something else.
Right, yeah.
A shooting spree.
Yes, exactly.
Anything.
Right. Yeah, much easier ways to do it.
Yeah, because it's probably not going to happen.
Right.
Nobody, I mean, in my opinion, you do stand-up comedy and sometimes people give a shit.
Right.
And then you get to do stuff. And then other times they never do, but you still got to do stand up comedy.
Yeah,
so
no doubt. So do it for just doing it. You're right.
So, but it was one of your dreams to be on Letterman.
My dream was, that was one of my dreams that I got into it because I wanted to be out. I was such a big fan of his show and Late Night. And that's, I know what we're going to talk about
is
my dorkdom of late night, television shows. But like I was saying, that was my whole – I grew up in the Midwest, and you're a Midwest person as well. I always taught, like, work hard and the good things will come. And most of my comedy career, it worked that way. Like, I would go
nice.
I would work hard at comedy clubs or open mics and stuff like that, and people would tell you about other gigs. And all of a sudden, they'd start filling in, and all of a sudden, I was making a living doing stand-up.
That's it.
I thought the same way – and I had landed a couple, like, smaller TV shows the same way. Like, someone sees you at the right place, right time, and they hear about you.
Sure, Deep Cable. I've done a lot of Deep Cable myself.
And so I thought Letterman would happen the same way. Mm-hmm. Just do this long enough, someone's going to hear about you. You'll hear about an audition, that kind of thing.
Yeah, but he only has like four comics on a year.
Well, that's
max.
Yeah, that was the thing. I didn't realize. When I got this,
nobody realizes
I didn't realize.
How can you're just like, well, I
but
could.
You would think I was in like a year in. I was 6-7 years in. You think by that time I would have?
Oh no,
known how it works.
I've been doing it almost 30 years, and I have absolutely no idea.
Yeah,
of like what I'm doing. I mean, I'm just like someone will reveal something. I'm like.
That's what I mean,
oh,
yeah.
Is that how
so
it works?
So I felt very stupid after I started this project, like not realizing. But so when it hit, then I realized when I all of a sudden had someone, you know, a doctor said, you may only, worst case scenario, you got 5 years.
And when worst was case, that?
This was 2005.
Okay, so you
we're
lived.
10 years, yeah.
You've lived, man.
I'm doubled his worst case scenario.
That's so, it. Nice work.
So yeah, we're here.
Are you in remission?
It's not officially remission. I still have, so it was in my intestines and my liver.
Okay.
A little surgery took out the intestines.
Mm-hmm.
Not all my intestines, just the
yeah, you're
going to
need
bad.
Some plumbing.
And still have the tumors on my liver, but I, for luck, very slow growing on all the tumors.
Oh, so, that's awesome. Yeah.
I've been very lucky after that kind of first year after, you know, a bunch of probing and surgery and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So it's not officially remission because it hasn't gone away. It hasn't gone backwards. But
and those are still there.
They're still there. So I do a lot of scans, checkups, that kind of thing.
Yeah, fair enough. So that was the journey to do that. Did you say that you've always liked late night television? I never liked it as a kid.
You didn't? No. You know what it was? Because there was only, obviously this dates us both.
Right.
But three television channels.
Right. There was just that and PBS.
PBS.
And then UHF.
Like a UHF channel.
Sure. There were five, maybe.
But it was, two of them wouldn't even come in. I was out in the suburbs of Chicago. Two were you'd have to shake the antenna or something like that.
And nothing you wanted to watch.
Right, exactly. And there was one TV. We had one TV in the whole house. Mm-hmm. It was basically the size
of remote.
The couch. Yeah, exactly.
It was my dad would be like, go snap his fingers and I'd have to run up and...
So you'd have to watch what your parents would watch.
Yep.
And which I think is somewhat a good thing. I think that's I see my sister's got kids now and they only always listen and watch what they want now.
Yeah.
I think there's some good things that come out of being forced to listen to certain music that you don't want to and watch things you don't want to because
But everybody has 9 televisions and if they don't, everybody has their own laptop.
That's right.
Or iPad so they can put Dora on an endless
for
loop.
Them. Yeah.
And then go watch whatever creepy drug thing that we all want
to
watch.
Right, The Wire.
Some murder drug thing.
So I think my parents would watch, Johnny Carson.
So when you were 12 or 13 and you stayed up that late, you were allowed to do it.
Yeah. So I'd be up. That was probably about my bedtime. Yeah. The Midwest. So we're on it. We get everything an hour earlier.
Right.
There.
So
that
10.
Was a good thing.
Yeah. So, so the news
would be at
10.
10:30, Johnny Carson comes on. I was probably supposed to be going to bed around that time.
I had, my bedtime was 9 o'clock till I graduated from high school.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. My parents didn't like us. They were like, go away. go read a book. And so I did. So I never did watch the show, but I watched a lot of the afternoon shows. And then I tried to catch up with the museum, the TV museum. I don't know if you've ever been.
Yes. I love it.
Yeah. I would go to every time I'd go to New York, I'd be like, I got to go to the TV museum and then sit there for
a
day
and a half.
Some
episodes and see. Yeah.
Just a lot of Dick Cavett, a lot of, nonsense. Anyway.
It's the best. That's awesome. That's the great thing now about obviously the internet. There's so
the
much
YouTube.
At your fingertips.
Yeah,
you can just look this stuff up and, find it everywhere. But you used to have to go to a museum and check things out like a library. And
I remember seeing, I think on Fridays, which is weird because I think Johnny Carson was on 5 days a week, but he more often than not did not work the Friday.
Right. He would have a guest host.
Yeah. But I do remember seeing some of the Johnny Carson show. I mean, it was a great show. I mean, I don't know a lot about Steve Allen or Jack Parr or any of those guys, but they, I mean, Joey Bishop and any of those guys.
Right.
You got anything on those guys?
I've only seen those shows, obviously, all on YouTube or the old history. Not a fan of Steve Allen. I mean, he's a guy I'm obviously a Letterman fan. If you see some of his old stuff, Letterman is aping him at some point very early on.
Right, clearly
a fan. I say that, a huge fan, obviously, he is. And
it's like, this is how it's supposed to be done.
This is right. This guy was doing it, which is kind of funny, because Dave's obviously a big Johnny Carson fan, which is part of the whole folklore.
Right.
But he actually went back, when he started a show.
I think he probably didn't want to cop to the Carson thing.
Exactly.
When you see a comic and you're like, well, no, I love what they do, and their timing is super addictive. Right. I get addicted... when I follow Jimmy Pardo or Todd Glass,
you
I have the same cadence.
Yeah.
And
my friend worked with Todd Barry one week, and all of a sudden we saw him after the whole week he worked with him, and his delivery was just so much slower and calmer, and it was you really do it. You start picking up.
Yeah, you pick up some timing, and as long as the words are coming out of your gap,
they're coming out. And
they're yours. So
I always wonder, does everyone notice, or is it just the people close to you? Do they pick up on it? They're like, I noticed that there's
I see what's happening.
A little subtle difference all of a sudden from you working with them.
So Carson was on more than 30 years, right? Or just 30 years?
I think it was right at 31. So, 92, 90, 60. Yeah, I think 30 years. I think 30, just 30.
I think he was a numerologist and he decided to check out.
And he decided that.
Yeah,
he's
like, I'm done now. And he had comics on a lot.
He was, I mean, it was the big thing.
Right, obviously. And people do expect, as a late night host, even if you have no stand-up background, to put stand-up comedy on the program.
Right.
Which is interesting, because Letterman, I mean, his stand-up, from what I've heard of the stories in the 70s, is that he didn't like it.
Yeah,
he didn't want to be a stand-up.
Right.
And he wanted to be a talk show host.
Yeah.
And it all worked out for him.
Yes.
And is that your phone?
That's my phone.
That's awesome. No, mine usually goes off, don't worry. And
Right. No. He never went back. Like all the other guys, at least obviously Leno, while he was doing the Tonight Show, every weekend you'd hear he'd fly. Yeah. He'd fly down to Vegas. He'd be doing corporates. Like Letterman,
comedy
once he was
and magic.
Done,
yeah.
he walked away. Yeah, the Comedy and Magic every Sunday.
Yeah. I mean, Leno is a comic.
Yes.
I mean, Joan Rivers is a comic.
Right.
And did stand up until they died.
Yes.
And Letterman was a guy who did stand up and liked it.
Yeah.
But was not what he wanted to do in life.
Right.
And he was happy doing those four monologue jokes four nights a week.
And that being the breadth of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Didn't miss it, obviously.
It's, and then there was this whole thing about sitting at panel and stuff. And
yes, that's one of my favorite things about Late Night. And this is why I love it, because there's so much. It really is in the scope. You know, you say in the mid-50s when Steve Allen and Parr begin the Tonight Show back then. It's crazy all the drama that's gone on amongst in this kind of late night, thing. I guess there's been some daytime talk show feuds and stuff like this. There's so many feuds and the legends in the late night lore. You know, you mentioned Joan Rivers. Joan Rivers getting her own show opposite Johnny Carson because she thought she was going to get
Johnny Carson.
The Johnny Carson show when he was done, and then mm-hmm. it turns out she wasn't, so she thinks, oh, I'm going to go my own. And then the guy who basically made her a star, Johnny Carson, won't talk to her, even on his deathbed, he won't, make amends anymore. And
well, yeah, there was a lot of hoopla about him, and I remember Jimmy J.J. Walker.
Yeah.
I worked with him accidentally once, and nice guy. Nice guy off stage. Sweetheart of a gentleman.
Yeah.
And
I think a Letterman buddy. Because, yeah, Letterman,
and a Letterman
usually
guy.
Has him on once a year. Like,
right.
There's those guys.
He's had those guys on once a year. And the weird thing about, and he would talk about back in the early 70s, how you had to clear everything by Johnny Carson. And you're like, but he would get to be on Merv Griffin and all of the other shows, I forget all of the other names of those afternoon shows.
Right, everything,
They would have these afternoon shows. And he would come on, and he would do it every two and a half months.
Mm-hmm.
And they wouldn't even vet it. They would be like, okay, you're doing 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And it just has to be TV ready. Please just keep it together and not stuff you did last time.
Right. And go to it and just come on. It, just like a guest, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's
like you would expect a guest to it.
Right. And at that time, nobody was going on the shows to plug stuff as much.
Right.
Which is all they do now.
That's it. That's the whole, the whole guise of the whole thing is to do that. That brings up where I was going with the Johnny Carson. It was the big deal, not only to get the show, that at that time was the pinnacle, was to get on the Johnny Carson show. But he would do this thing that, of course, every comic knows about. If he liked it or whatever was special that night, he'd call you over to the couch afterwards.
Right, if you cracked him up.
And this had to be like
a surprise to
exactly,
him.
Exactly, right.
He's like, no, this guy's good. I want
this guy's good. Have him come over. But looking back on it now, and I see the point. I've heard a few people make this point, and this is, again, just about late night and all the weird little quirks. Johnny Carson would have, and he was, at some level a comic and a magician. He would go out and do this and perform in Vegas as a routine.
Oh, I think he was more of a comic than Letterman was.
Oh, definitely, definitely. Yeah. But here he has these comics, and it's their night, probably the night of their life, right, for most
of
them.
Right, getting on.
But they had to earn coming over to the couch, whereas you could have been – I'll give you an example. I saw Johnny Carson the last year he was on. My sister was getting married in L.A., and I came out to see her, and she got me tickets to
– Oh, to see a live taping.
It was a month before he retired.
Oh, that's awesome.
It was amazing. And
was it a good night?
It was great.
Okay.
It was fantastic. In fact,
it was hit and miss there the last couple of years.
Yeah. But this is when all the greats started coming back.
Oh, right. If it was the last month, it would be.
Jonathan, I saw two nights in a row.
Wow.
Jonathan Winters and Robin Williams one night.
Yeah.
And then the other night was a little less. Dabney Coleman. Mm-hmm. And then the second guest, I don't even remember her name. I've never heard from her again. She was the second lead actress on a show called, I want to say, The Tortellis.
Okay.
Which was a spinoff of Cheers.
Okay.
Okay, so that was the guest. That person was allowed.
So not Rhea Perlman.
Yes.
But
right.
Somebody.
Exactly. The real Perlman of that spinoff show was on. So I've heard comics make the point, I think it's a good one, that person was allowed to come on the show and sit on the couch and be interviewed. But a comedian who's at the top of their game,
mm-hmm.
Hasn't just landed their first gig, audition and nailed it.
They just perform and then they're out.
But they have to earn.
So people get mad at that.
People are mad. Yeah, there's a little bit of anger that Carson made people do that. Like, obviously,
stuff.
Some people love it. It's one of, you hear Jerry Seinfeld talk or some of those guys. They're like, it was such a big deal, wondering if Johnny was good. Well, it's also kind of a jerk move that he was making.
Well, it's weird that you think that you've hit it.
Yes.
And then you've got to worry about something else.
Right.
You're
exactly.
Like, well,
why
screw
do I
you.
Need to think about that?
Right.
And I'm at the top of my game.
I'm just going to go tell some jokes,
yeah.
And then if you want to come and talk to me, you should come find me.
Right. Why this night of all nights do
right,
I have to
why
worry?
the extra thing?
And again, it's not like it was a holy couch over there. There were a lot of, you know what I mean, like
Or they had Dabney Coleman.
Who did Bert
Call. Poor man's Gene Hackman.
Yes. Yeah,
that exactly. guy's, I like Dabney Coleman.
The world's oldest woman, you know.
Yeah.
They would
have the animal people.
Exactly.
So, yeah, it's...
Yeah, they would have a skunk that would pee on Johnny's shoulder.
Right, but I don't know who could follow that.
The comedian.
I don't know
over.
Who's going to follow that, though. That's
exactly.
actually quite hard.
Maybe you don't want to go over
it. But I think, I mean, maybe it was something about stand-up. You know, there's also this illusion that stand-up comics are super competitive.
Yeah.
And I have not, I mean, I've met competitive people that are stand-up comics.
Yeah.
Those are people I do not hang out with. I'm just like, wow, why don't you just do your fucking time and get the hell
and
out of my
go.
Face?
Yeah, there's no reason to hang out.
There's no
anymore.
Reason to badmouth or be all mad and sit in the back and go, what is she talking about?
What's
You're like, what's that? You know that old joke? How many comics does it take to screw in a light bulb? Three. Two to screw in the light bulb. One to screw in the light bulb and two to talk about how long he's been up there.
How long he's been doing.
Yeah. I mean, there's a bunch of them. I don't know all of them. And clearly jokes are not my forte because I fucked that one up.
Well, that's why it proves you're a stand-up. That's what I always love when people come up after a comedy show and they're like, let me tell you a joke. And then they tell you the joke. And you're like, what?
I've heard that.
See? I didn't do any joke jokes. Like, right. I was telling stories up there. Mm-hmm, it was kind of, mm-hmm. it's a different thing. But, I felt the same thing when I first started getting in. People, like, I read a few books and stuff like that, and people were like, oh, it's a real cutthroat. And I've never found that. In fact, I think most people are extremely, helpful and friendly, and it's almost like you're in the trenches together.
Yeah.
Now, I it's probably one of those things where the people who are shine so much of a jerk. You know.
Oh, right. They are super
that
shiny.
Those stories spread around so that stands out more. It's much more fun for that to be out as the story. Than,
right. So someone mentioned someone's
Jackie was
name.
So nice to me, and she told me about this gig I should do when I'm in town. And,
right.
You know what I mean? Like that
right.
didn't get out there as the
not as much. And then somebody else mentioned some dingbat, and you're like, oh yeah, that guy.
I
don't hang out with that guy.
Yeah.
She's an idiot. I will not be any
no
part
more.
Of her world. And so it is. I mean. It's. I think it's like every other job to some extent. You know, I mean, in 1997 or 1998, a guy who ended up being a DJ. Oh, it'd be so great this story if I could remember his name, and then you could Google it. His name was Mitch. I don't remember his last name. He was a comic. He's a DJ in Denver, last I heard.
Okay.
And but he had one of the greatest lines about stand-up comedy. Another comic came up, and he said, I can't hang out with that guy. I don't know what to talk. That guy's he's not a good comic. And somebody goes, yeah, he's a really nice guy though. And he goes, But it'd be like if I were a plumber and somebody else was a really shitty plumber, what am I supposed to talk to that guy about? I can't talk to him about plumbing. I don't respect his work, right? He's bad at what he does. So how do I talk to that guy?
Yeah.
And it was an amazing analogy of how to talk to other comics. That is not particularly forgiving. I mean, I am willing to be more than polite to comics that are just doing their job.
Right.
In my opinion.
They're out there. Yeah.
They do stand up. That's my computer. I should probably turn that down. So what are your favorite shows like now? I mean, do you watch all of them still?
Yeah. I mean, obviously there is a time limit that I can't catch every single one. I definitely stay up on Conan is my favorite probably since, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago. I mean, Letterman's my all-time favorite.
Right.
Obviously.
He's great.
But I think Dave has started, you know, over the past decade, phoning it in a little bit.
Well, it's great whenever they think about taking it away from him or there's some sort of drama, like when he's sleeping around or whatever.
Yeah, right.
It's it revitalizes
it. It gets really good, exactly.
He gets really, he's like, oh, that's right, I used to care about this.
I used to care. And you can see, like, it's obvious. And that's, I think, why I love Conan so much. Conan seems like
Every day. Every day he wants to be there, and he mm-hmm. wants to mess around, and he wants it to be fun yeah. for everyone.
And it's my humor that I love to watch, like silly, just so
I've heard that Kimmel
sometimes.
Is amazing.
Yeah.
I don't ever watch Kimmel.
I'm not a huge Kimmel fan. Every time I watch the show.
Right.
Every time I laugh, though, and this isn't it. Obviously, his job is to make a great show.
Right.
The show itself is good. I'm just not a Kimmel fan. Like, he himself has never made me laugh. Like, it's always, like, let's say he's talking to someone. He's playing the straight man, which
oh,
is
right.
fine.
He's
the straight guy.
But I hear he's a really good straight man.
He's great.
But what I've also, I mean, I didn't start watching him because I am not a huge fan of Adam Carolla.
Right, so that's the tie-in to the whole...
And I don't know anything about Adam Carolla. Yeah. I mean, it's just like when you see somebody on the street and you're like, I'm probably not going to like that guy.
Yeah, right.
That isn't fair.
Yeah.
But it's not for me.
Right.
And something tells me it's not going to affect Adam Carolla's career. The
not
fact that
all.
He doesn't
yeah,
get the Jackie Cation right. bump. I think that's going to be.
From you today. It's a skyrocketing down. And right. now you've taken me with you. If you
exactly
get blackballed in this business
exactly.
now.
Exactly. For... And then I never tried to watch Carson Daly.
Yes.
But wasn't he musical?
Yes, completely. Carson Daly was. I guess he would attempt. He was taking a swing at maybe doing a traditional talk show, but I mean, the monologue jokes were very bad.
Right.
And again, like you said, his start was really musical. And actually, I think he does the show. His show's really changed now. It's still on, but it's really probably what it should have been from the beginning. Is more of a music and interview show. So he'll
okay.
talk to people, but he's not. He used to do a monologue. He used to do some sketches. And
okay.
It was really.
Wow,
I hate to say it because he's had some good writers for the show, but it was just not his forte. It was bad.
Right, just out of his wheelhouse.
Yeah,
so he couldn't rise to
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
He's a bit of a haircut, you know, that guy. He's kind of shiny.
Yes.
And you're like, okay. So, and it's not that he doesn't have, he's not intelligent or doesn't have valid opinions on stuff. It's just he's not really comic material. It's not
right,
really a comic
exactly,
kind of
yeah. He's very, you know, I think what made him a big hit on MTV, which is, you know, teenage girls and
Total oh, right.
Request Live and be like, oh,
because he's super dreamy.
He's a good looking guy and he's very, and I mean this in the best way, like vanilla. He's very
yeah.
like, he's not going to offend you. The worst thing he's going to do is turn his hat backwards, you know, and
right,
that's
which is vaguely
very rebellious,
but,
you know,
but
which is fine. So that's I wish he almost would have from the beginning done the music angle rather than try and be one of the like late night guys, because I think he could have had a really cool show. Like there used to be some great music shows, you know, when we're like, you know, the old Soul Train and American
oh, right.
Bandstand and you know, even late night used to have some of these old.
Who's the guy who watched the ball fall every
yeah,
year?
Yeah, Dick Clark.
And, Dick Clark.
Yeah.
Yeah, he had a lot of American Bandstand. I think that you mentioned it.
Yeah.
All right. So
I think he would have been better off just sticking to that, but he tried it again. The list of carnage on the late night talk
right.
show list
but
is
he,
huge.
But he rose above it to some extent and is still in the game.
Yeah.
As
no,
opposed to
no
guys
doubt.
Like Arsenio. And worse, I mean, Arsenio was good at what he did,
yeah.
and it lasted as long as it did. The reboot didn't work for some reason.
Right.
I think because the late night, there's just too many of them.
Oh my God, yeah, it's crazy.
And so it's hard to find a niche kind of thing.
How do you stand out in this? Yeah.
Right. I mean, there's Alan Thicke and Chevy Chase tried to do it.
yeah, Pat Sajak.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Right. Everybody, you were like, well, you're good at that one thing. Maybe
right.
we'll,
maybe
people
you could,
just want to
hear
you.
Maybe you could do this. Yeah.
Riffing in between a game show is much, much different
right.
than and he's really good at riffing at that
he's
game
fantastic.
Show.
Fantastic. Yeah. You enjoy watching that.
Yeah. And then now they have a bunch of just a slew of dudes that I've never heard of.
Yeah. James Corden has just come on.
Not hard to do with me. I never heard of anyone.
right.
But James Corden, like
Ferguson before him.
Ferguson before
which was,
them.
Which is a weird they went from Ferguson was a weird choice because
yep.
he had been a sitcom, you know, third banana
yep.
probably on that show. Maybe fourth or fifth, even.
But even Conan.
And, yeah.
Conan
oh,
was
Conan
just a
was
writer
like, yeah,
guy.
Yeah, exactly. Such a weird choice when they picked him. In fact,
he was
harangued.
It's weird where they get the people from. I don't know where they get the people from. They're not really looking at stand-ups exclusively. They're not really looking at interview people. Because if you thought about it, someone who'd be really good at it would be someone who's had a podcast, let's say, for 10 years.
Right, yeah.
Right? Like Adam Carolla, myself,
people that have the interviewing skill down, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. Someone who'd been talking to people for a dozen years. Maron would be really good at
mm-hmm.
it. But it's – Pete Holmes had a podcast, so he got picked.
Yeah. I loved his late night show, by the way. Really loved it because it was different. He was doing some different stuff, and what I really liked to do it, and actually there's a couple, I think Conan did one. A couple other shows are doing this now where instead of just doing the live interview, they'll do a taped interview with someone.
Really?
And they'll do a longer version of it. So it doesn't come out just like the person's just there plugging something all of a sudden.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So they'll do what's obvious was probably at least a half hour interview, and then they edit it down to 5 minutes. So you're getting some really good chunky stories.
Oh, so you can really get into it.
Yeah, they're deeper into it, and it's been – now you're just getting the good stuff instead of like the hello, how you been? Great. Say hey, Andy.
Well,
or
you
the
got
band,
a minute
way
and a half.
The band, and
yeah.
What were you plugging? And mm-hmm. when's that come out? You know, which takes up half the interview. So Pete Holmes was doing that on his show, and it was so good. It was just a nice different thing.
Yeah.
So really, Pete, all he was doing – I think that ended up being live on the show from the ones, you know, that I saw. I got to go to a couple and watch, and then, you know, the ones I saw on TV.
Right.
It was just his monologue, and if he had a comic, those were the two live things, you know. Maybe they do a skit as well, but almost all the interviews were pre-taped things.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That's crazy. That sounds fascinating.
It was really a nice different energy. You know, that's the other thing about late night. Like, even when they give it to someone else, like James Corden, who's incredibly talented, but – He's
stuck in a box.
He's in the format. He's going to come out. He's doing a monologue. Then he's going to do a bit. He's in the Fallon vein, so he's going to do something with dancing and singing. You know,
right.
But no one's doing anything that different. The Pete was doing a little different. I like.
What do you think? Because Colbert loves to sing and dance.
Yeah.
What do you think's going to happen?
Gosh, I think Colbert is so crazy because I loved and everyone I talk to I think has the same worry.
He's not doing
the character.
Oh, that how will it be not in character?
Right.
Okay.
Because at some level, Colbert was around. We knew him. He was fantastic on The Daily Show.
Right.
He was fantastic on Strangers with Candy. But, and you know, there's a bunch of other movies he had parts in. But he was never this huge icon where you're like, I love this guy, until he did that character.
Right, that character.
So it's
and you knew that
go,
it was a character.
Yes.
And so for him not to do that character will be really weird.
It'll be weird because it's like, we've seen
now,
before,
and he said that he's not going to
like it. Yeah, but we love this. Like,
is he not doing the character sure?
Yeah, he said he's not going to be doing the character on the show. So,
okay.
So it'll be, you know, again, that's what made his interviews great.
Because he came from that crazy space.
He never had to worry about what anyone was plugging. He could shit all over it. And,
right. He could. Yeah.
You know,
that is interesting. That
and make fun of. Yeah. It was so great because, he made that every interview was interesting because of where he was coming from. It didn't matter the guest even.
Right. Because he didn't have to be sincere.
Yeah, exactly.
And that is actually an incredible power that every other interviewer has never had to deal with.
Exactly.
That's very
funny. It's
going
to be interesting. So,
yeah.
I'm definitely excited to see it. And listen, he, like you said, he's so talented. He can sing, he can dance, he can do all this stuff.
Right. So
if anyone can pull it off, of course it's him. But
right. But it might get super goony. And then have you watched the John Oliver?
Yes. Yeah. In fact,
and does he do interviews? I've only seen 15
minutes. None that
I've seen.
I've seen
like he does 15-minute chunks.
Half a dozen. Yeah. It's almost like
it's intensely
more
written,
in-depth Daily Show. Like we're gonna take one topic and cover it for half the show. And,
right.
You know, and it's really good. But yeah, I've never seen him
smart,
have a guest
it's
on
funny.
Yet.
It's what I've seen of it has been really good.
Yeah.
But it doesn't ever. His sincerity is comes from a stand-up sensibility.
Right.
Because he's clearly a stand-up.
Yes.
Yeah, John Oliver is clearly a guy who's like, well, I'm going to make fun of this.
Right.
And Colbert wasn't ever a stand-up. He was a sketch guy.
Yeah.
An improv guy. So, and
right.
I have not watched enough Larry Wilmore. I got rid of cable, and I haven't seen Daily Show Colbert, or even though I have Hulu Plus, I don't know why I'm not watching him.
I haven't. I've watched a bunch just because he comes on after Daily Show. So, yeah, I've seen Larry, and I like him. I loved him on The Daily Show. It hasn't taken off, but it's one of those things.
Might be a slow burn.
Might be a slow burn. Obviously, Conan,
he's
who was my
is
favorite,
he in between
was the
that
slowest
and
burn.
At Midnight?
Yes.
So it's Daily Show, and then the
Daily
new
show,
guy.
Yeah, Nightly Show, and then
Midnight. Trevor?
Noah, yeah.
Trevor Noah, that's it.
He'll be taking over.
And he'll be taking over. And he's very dreamy. He's a handsome gentleman.
Oh, yeah, you think
he'll look good in a suit.
That's, as a Midwest man, I'm not allowed to say if I have feelings for him or not.
Oh, that's
so
it.
So I have to keep that hidden in the dark recesses.
In the dark recesses.
I can see that. I can see that he'd be. This is my measuring stick for men. If I look at them and I think, I would have got laid more if I looked like him. That then I think that he's probably a good looking person. You're right.
I bet you that is a common. That's got to be a simple man of the people kind of way of looking at dudes.
Right? Just be like, if I look like that
guy, I would
have done better.
I might have got some more action.
If I could have brought my personality teamed up with those looks.
Yeah, there's no reason to have a personality if you have those looks.
That's true. I wouldn't need this personality.
You don't need to work that muscle. It's because my favorite old interview styles are those Dick Cavett ones, because you were talking about Pete Holmes and the in-depth stuff. Mm-hmm. And Dick Cavett would get just a mess of different people and literally just let them talk at each other,
mm-hmm.
and just sort of light it up a little bit here and there. Yeah. And he would do a 10-minute monologue.
Yeah. There was no rush to get right.
No, well, granted, his show was an hour and a half.
Yeah.
So he could take his sweet time.
Someday.
And some of it was good. And, you know, I have all of the compilations.
Oh, do you like the DVDs? And
The DVDs. But he's cut them down because he's no fool.
Because he even knows it.
Yeah, even he knows that there's some of that stuff is just clock eater stuff. So nobody needs to sit through that.
Well, that's even the Tonight Show for a while was an hour and a half.
Yeah. But they'd have. You know what I'd love is I would love to have sort of a Carol Burnett kind of situation, which was also an hour and a half and was a sketch show and was a lot of physical comedy that I don't see anymore.
Yeah.
But I think like Michelle McCarthy could do it.
Yes. Yeah.
And
have a variety show there, yeah.
Yeah, the Los Angeles, if you ever come to Los Angeles, please go see 100 free shows with everybody who should be famous.
Because there's
so much talent here, mm-hmm. that it's chaff.
Yeah.
It's just like, well, you're incredibly gifted. You have a tick in your eye. We can't put you on television because it'll make people uncomfortable.
You're too tall. Yeah.
You're not tall enough.
Next to Tom Cruise, you'll make him look short.
And everybody's supposed to do 1,900 sit-ups so that they can sort of look.
Yeah.
Which is why I can't tell any of them apart anymore.
Oh, that's a good point.
And granted,
they almost, yeah.
I am not 25 either. So maybe if I were 25, I could tell other 25-year-olds apart.
But, yeah, that's true. It's right if you're part of the group.
And I was like, but they all have that same sort of weird, and especially the bearded guys, it's just a mess. And granted, I mean, thankfully it's fading.
Yeah.
The bearded youth movement
is going
the way of all things.
I don't know, you can describe to the audience. This is
a little scruff.
This is about 3 weeks of not shaving. So even if I wanted to jump on the hipster bandwagon, I could not do it.
This was perfect.
This was a good, I don't know, what would you, do you think this beard thing's lasted 6 years? Where the beard's gotten hot,
I wish you had said that beard was 6 years
ago. It wouldn't be much different if I had waited 6 years. I honestly.
Right. But it looks like it's got sort of that Miami Vice kind of.
Does it have a little George Michael-ish?
Just sort of the
era.
Except for not quite as dense, because
he was
he's a super hairy dude.
So I felt bad for these past few years even if I had wanted the goatee or the Van Cleef for all these things, I can't do anything with them.
Well, you know,
so
one of the,
it's nice that the clean shaven's coming back.
A couple episodes ago, I did Ian Abramson on the show. He was on the show. I don't know if you know him.
I don't know.
But he paints a mustache on his face.
Mm.
Like Groucho?
Groucho. Yeah.
Except for that it's uneven. And so
purposely uneven?
Yeah. It looks like he took a Sharpie and just went. And so he was sitting by, and before the show started taping, I was like, what's with that?
Yeah,
and he goes,
Oh,
it's a joke. And I was like, all right, that is a commitment to I don't know, ink poisoning. And I think he was doing a sketch that day. I was like, that's got to be hard to get off. He goes, yeah. And he said, did you think it was real? And I said, I am a simple woman of the people. I thought maybe it was a scar or something. You know, I don't know if you read Tina Fey's book, but she talks about that.
Bossy pants?
Yeah, she talks about that scar on her face.
Right.
And she said, she knows exactly the kind of person you are if you ask within the first 2 hours of meeting her or whatever about her scar. And I would have been the kind of person that she mentions. Goes, and then there's always someone who's like, oh, did a cat scratch you?
Right. You're taking stabs.
Right.
Stab's not a good word, but what happened.
Well, yeah. And she said, those dum-dums. I always have time for those dum-dums. I would have been one of those dum-dums. Because quite honestly, until I heard that book, I was like, she has a scar on her face? I didn't even know. know she had a scar. Have you ever? I've never looked that closely at her face. I don't know.
It's one of those. I was watching. Is it maybe this is the Sarah Palin where she was doing all those? Saturday Night Live. I just one week just noticed it, and it had been years. Obviously,
right.
She'd been around, and then just one week, I was
she
like,
she must have turned her face
right,
in
just
such
the
a way.
Right way, and I was like, huh? Did you? You know, I said to my wife, did you see that? And she's like, no, what? And, you know, now you can pause and rewind, and like she's like, oh yeah. And then I looked it up, and you know,
the scar on
history,
face.
You know, from when she was a kid,
right, and yeah. and the greatest reason for never telling the story,
yeah,
which was then she would be asked about it because I when I first started doing stand up, I heckled Sam Kinison. That was the first comic I ever saw.
And you heckled him?
And I heckled him.
Oh, wow.
Guess awesome. What happened? It doesn't end well. floor is mopped up with me because I heckled. And I was drunk as a wheelbarrow,
yeah.
Right? As if that's
as
a thing.
Should be.
That's a thing, right?
Yeah.
And he was, I don't believe I've ever used that term.
That's good. It does make sense, though. It's bowl full of
tippy,
liquor.
Tippy. Yeah. And and he was coked up and off the reservation.
Yeah.
I got a lot of euphemisms, you guys. And but I told the story, and now and I put it on my website. I was like, oh well, this will take care of it. It'll just be in print. Someone can cut
throw
and paste. Nope. Everyone needs me to tell the story over and over again.
Yeah,
and I was like,
yeah.
I should take it off my website and never bring it up again. And but yeah, I think it's too late.
That's it. But that's a what a great
introduction to stand-up comedy.
Introduction and like a badge, right? Like even a.
Yeah.
Girl Scottish, you know, badge that you heckled him, Sam, and that you got mopped
well,
forward, right? Like that's it's like a Rickles-esque kind of thing.
It's Rickles-esque, but it's also there's no way that I can ever be mad at a heckler
because
it's everything I deserve.
That's
it's
so funny.
Everything I deserve in life.
I come from the opposite. I loved stand up before I started.
Okay,
and I took a girl on a date one time. And she said, "Hey, I got tickets. This is back." Oh, probably early 90s, I guess. So maybe the comedy club boom is just going down.
Right.
And
Zany's
in Chicago
or something?
There's still a bunch. This is when I think it was like a strip mall one. You know what
okay.
I mean? Where
that was only there for
here.
A year and a
exactly.
half and gone.
And so she goes, I got free tickets to the comedy club. Do you like comedy? Yeah, let's go. And it was my first date with this girl. I didn't really know her.
Always
and
a good idea. Take
so,
your first
exactly.
date to a comedy club.
Now
sit in the
I know
front
all
row.
This stuff. Yeah, as a comic, that you know, you find these people in the audience just like this. But she got drunk, mm-hmm. and I had seen a bunch of comedy. Like, by this, I knew at this point, don't heckle, don't do that. You know, then
keep it together.
People keep it together. But she got drunk and started yelling at the guy, and then of course, because I'm there,
yeah.
and, you know, she was a cute girl. He didn't want to. Go over the top on her and
right.
make the audience mad at him. So he starts going into me.
Sure.
And he mopped the floor
with
me. Because
he knows better. He
yeah.
knows better than to attack. Because it doesn't matter. Even if you're a woman attacking a woman heckler for some reason, audience still on the side of the woman heckler.
Really?
Always. Always.
Oh, I didn't know
just
that.
Because
I thought that was that would be the one thing you'd get credit for. Is that
oh, no.
It was an even fight or something.
You would think.
Kinda.
You
yeah.
would think. Nope. No. For some reason, they're like, oh, she's really that idiot woman is an idiot. And you're like,
and we
yes.
feel bad for her.
Yes, yeah, she's an idiot.
Yeah, that's
someone
what I'm saying.
Someone needs to kill her emotionally just for a minute.
Just for tonight.
Just
she
just
won't even. That's the crazy part of them feeling bad.
Yeah.
Most of these hecklers won't even remember.
No.
Right?
Bamford, my favorite line, heckler
yeah.
line in Salt Lake City is this this woman is being ejected or this guy is being ejected. I forget who it was, but Maria goes, this is going to be the best first AA share ever. You go. And it's
that's awesome.
Yeah, but it's so. But okay, so do you watch other kinds of late night television? Do you watch
yes.
like Saturday Night Live?
Yeah, Saturday Night Live as well. I think that's what I mean. It's kind of grown up in the 80s and then the 90s. And again, the three. You know, I started by mentioning it's good that parents, I think, make you watch
right.
things you don't want to watch and hear
yeah.
things you don't want to. And maybe that was the good thing about the three stations. There was only so much. There was plenty of crap. Like, there's not. Plenty of crap now. This is the golden age, I think, it's
yeah, we're at
like,
a golden age of TV.
If you're not finding something to like, if you're one of these people that's still like, there's 1,000 channels and nothing on, you know, you're an idiot. You're not
right.
looking.
What shiny thing
yeah,
are you,
exactly.
what do you like?
Right. But at that point, when there was just three channels, then there was a lot of crap on TV. You know what I mean? That Three's Company, I mean, I'm sure if you watch now, I loved it. sure if I watch now, I'd be like, oh boy, this
was. Let me tell you something, Jack Tripper. Talk about physical comedy.
Great physical comedy. Right,
that guy nailed it.
He was fantastic. That's how I remember it.
And the first, I would say, I would bet the first three seasons.
Yeah.
Of Three's Company were probably great.
Yeah, you're right.
I haven't seen it in 30 years, but I bet you it's great. Because the first two or three seasons of almost everything
is pretty good. Yeah.
I've been rewatching a lot of Barney Miller lately.
Oh, I love Barney Miller, yeah.
Because we have an antenna.
Yeah. Oh, so
we get like Me TV.
I love it, the old Dick Van Dyke shows.
Yeah, they show the hell out. And Carol Burnett. They had Carol Burnett. Literally, I was laughing so hard that I cried. Yeah. But again, they're editing it down to the best of.
Yeah.
But remember that. What's my line, or whose line is it anyway? Or with Proops.
Yeah. Whose line is it anyway?
Whose line is it anyway? I get them all mixed up.
Yeah.
But they used to shoot those for like 2 hours and then cut it down to 42 minutes. Which is important, I think, for sketch and improv and all that stuff.
Yeah, especially when you're doing stuff off the top of your head. I mean, yeah, you it almost gives you more free reign.
It's not all
gold.
You don't have to think every word
out of my mouth better be good. And I feel that on stand-up, right? Like if I go too long. Like if I all of a sudden have a new bit and it's a story or something like that, and I don't have the beats worked out, and
everything's eight minutes, I bring it
in the middle of my act, and I've been getting a certain, you know, and I'm not one of these guys like four laughs a minute or whatever it is, you know, these guys laugh per minute guys. But there is something when all of a sudden I can feel it in my bones where all of a sudden I'm like, wow, you've just been talking and there hasn't been a laugh. Like it starts creeping up on me. So yeah, I think on the sketch side, those guys even more so, but they need it. We're more planned. So we're scripted. So.
Right. It's scripted and planned and it should work up. Even though, you know, they filmed Setlist a couple of times.
Yeah. Yeah.
British TV, I believe.
Did they? Yeah.
Yeah. It was Paul Provenza and Troy Conrad to have this show called Setlist.
It's awesome.
Go to setlistshow.com. It's a great idea. And you get a list of topics. You're given topics as you stand on stage, and you're supposed to pretend you've been doing those jokes for a long time. I'm telling to the Rangers. You know.
Yes, I know. Steve, well, of course.
Steve Mason. But the thing is,
you have no idea before you get on stage.
Right. And they did that for the shooting as well.
Yeah.
So clearly they had to shoot for longer.
Right.
Because people are screwing around trying to find the funny in your weirdo topic.
Yes.
And it all worked out. But again, like if you watch At Midnight, you know, the points never add up correctly because they shoot for 45 minutes to an hour.
Yeah.
And it's a 22-minute show. And they're like, well, it's not all going to be gold, you guys.
One of my friends was going on and he's like, I've been watching it. He didn't know the show.
Right.
I mean, he knew it, but he didn't watch it. And it's another one I watch. It's a late night show, obviously. I told him, I was like, he's like, I can't. Everything everyone says on there, it's great. It's fantastic. Mm-hmm. He's like, how do they think of it so quick? I was like, they don't think of it so quick.
They don't think of it so quick. You're given an hour.
They're given an hour and they tell you the topics and then you write towards those topics. He's like, oh, someone told you that? I was like, no, I can tell that just by watching because there's no way. I said,
Nobody's that funny. There's
that
a couple
quick,
of rounds that are instantaneous, but they're not.
Those stand out. You can tell.
Right. And
like, so, ah, okay.
It's they have a different energy to it.
Yes. And everyone who is just being immediate response with something very, very clever and deep and genius, all of a sudden seems a little more like, like they're tossing out an idea. Do you like that? I'm not as confident in this.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
In that round.
So it's, I mean, and it's fun because you can also blow off what you've written in if you come up with something while you're sitting there.
Right, right.
So exactly. And just riff off of somebody else's stuff. Something. And you're supposed to riff on the other contestants, so whatever.
Yeah.
But it's also now Jon Stewart's going away.
Jon Stewart, yeah. So Trevor coming in.
I haven't been watching Jon Stewart for the last 6 months since we got rid of cable or whatever. And it's always good. I mean, he does not have a problem. He has that stand-up sensibility like John Oliver that because it's not a character, he can just make fun of it.
Right, right.
Well, maybe Colbert will go with that. I'm back at Colbert.
Yeah.
Because I really want Colbert to shine in this situation.
And he's taking Letterman's spot, so I mean that's...
And I don't know that he'll have stand-ups.
Yeah.
He might.
Yeah,
he might,
that's true.
But he's more band people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he obviously loves music.
the person who has stand-up more than anyone is Conan. He has them, though I hear Larry Wilmore is having stand-ups.
Oh, really? He's going to do... He's
had a couple, I guess.
That's strange. I haven't seen none of the episodes I've seen are those.
And Kamau. Do you remember Kamau?
Yeah, Kamau. In fact, I started with Kamau in San Francisco.
Okay.
Well, he had been doing it a couple years before me.
But you know him from the San Francisco scene?
Yeah.
Yeah. He's got a new show, I guess.
Or a pilot
or something.
Yeah.
But he had stand-ups a couple of times when he had that show on FX.
Right.
Which then they moved to FXX. And everyone lost it.
Right, everyone lost it. It was nobody... doing great. And it was another late night show. So doing great.
It was doing really great once a week.
And then they went to, I think it was four nights a week then.
It might have been five.
It might even been five.
Which is crazy talk.
Yeah.
Like, how do you make some, like, not even Kamau wants to talk about race issues five nights a week.
And then it just seems like, oh my God, yeah.
He did a great episode of The Dork Forest where we went frame by frame or scene by scene of Rocky II.
Uh-huh.
The movie Rocky II.
Okay.
It's a great episode where he cared too much about the Rocky II movie.
Okay.
And I learned a lot. I learned a lot about his morals and Rocky's morals.
And Rocky's morals.
Yeah.
I have to listen to that. That's because, I'm a big Rocky fan.
Sure. Sure. It's got.
You know, so that's, you talk about, and this is the incestuous, you know, for the comedians that end up being part of these shows. So another San Francisco Kevin Avery, comedian, wrote for Kamau's show,
right,
and now he's writing on John Oliver's show.
Oh, good.
So, yeah, it's one of those things. Like, that's the other cool thing. Someone's seeing a lot of these writers that float around and, end up on the different shows and all these. Like, the guys that wrote for Carson that weren't writing for him then went, some of them went and did the Joan Rivers show when she did it. And
right.
They got blackballed and they couldn't get other late night shows. And,
right. But from what I've heard of staffing stuff, Conan does a really good job of keeping staff and not a lot of turnover.
Yeah.
And, Leno as well.
Yeah.
Leno was really good. I think the last couple of years there was more shakeups than normal. But he was from people.
Yeah, that first run.
Yeah, people mock Leno pretty harsh.
Yeah.
And he's just, I think he's a guy that doesn't ever want to stop working, you know? So he gave it away and then he was like, oh shit, I didn't want to give that away. And you're like, well, you already gave it away.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's like, well, no, I'm me. I can take it back.
Right. Well, that's what I mean. Like, if you wrote that in a book or it was in a movie, you'd be like, this would never happen in real life. That someone was given the Tonight Show 5 years before he would take over. That the number one guy was never told about it,
right?
And then he was still number one when that happened. And then that guy would take an earlier show in the evening, and everyone in the country knew he was just waiting for it to go wrong,
right?
So he could move back into that. It's just so crazy. Like you wouldn't believe it if someone told you.
Right.
We didn't all see it happen.
Right. And then, like, I don't even know.
And then a couple years later, the same thing happens. Like, he's still number one, and they bring in another younger guy, Jimmy Fallon. But this time it works.
And this time, for some reason, it works.
Yeah.
And then, did you watch Chelsea Lately? Did you ever watch that?
Yeah, Chelsea, yeah.
That was a
I did. I actually got to
mess.
Do warm-up a
oh,
couple
did you?
Times on Chelsea Lately.
Was that... Now, I hear stories about warm-up, where it's... I did it one time.
One time.
And,
this is how I get it. I don't go after those gigs, but they fall in my lap every now and then because I'm a clean comedian.
Right.
So a lot of times people think,
Steve.
Let's get this guy. But I'm not, we worked together before. I'm not Mr. High Energy, like jump around the stage with her. I think
right.
those
you don't
guys
own
need to
your
be...
own t-shirt cannon.
Yes,
is what
exactly
you're telling
right.
me.
Yeah. I rent. So,
yes.
But it's still, and it, like I said, I can get the job done, and I like it every once in a while doing this kind of thing.
Right, because it's a hell of a paycheck.
Yes,
it's a
great
perfectly
paycheck,
good paycheck. And,
yeah.
And you're like, okay, so it's 3 hours of babysitting, and I guess I'll do it. But it's not, I did the Ricky Lake show, which
oh, wow.
I mean,
yeah,
the different
was
shows.
This the original Ricky Lake?
I don't know. It was 2 years ago. How many Ricky Lake shows?
So she went away for a while and then came back. Almost Arsenio-esque.
Okay. Yeah. I did not know what I was doing.
Yeah.
I was like, sure. I will run around like a crazy person and try to get these people excited.
Yeah.
But the only question I could think of to ask anybody, I was like, does anybody know any songs from Hairspray? Anybody want to sing some songs from Hair? Which at one point I saw Ricky Lake just fucking glaring at me. And
wow,
then
so she,
then she kind of laughed.
Yeah.
I mean, I also saw, because I looked at her, I was like, Am I cool with this? And she was like, she just kind of waved her hand. She was like, fine. And, cause I didn't know what the fuck I was doing. And I'm just like, it reminded me, I had a weird, very short lived. I think I did 4 baseball. It was the St. Paul Saints was a,
you got to call a game?
No. I was fan in the stands for Channel 23 and Minneapolis, Minnesota. And, I don't know anything about sports. And even worse than that, I don't care anything about sports. But I said, sure. I think it paid $150. I was 12, and I was like, I need $150. Sure. So I'm running around.
That's a big money.
But I made every single interaction political. For some weird reason, I was like, well, what does the East German judge think? Or what? How do we discuss? And the references weren't even good because the Soviet Union had been gone for years.
Yeah.
And
that's so awesome.
It's a weird gig.
It's weird. And again, comedians are the people that do it, but it's not stand up really.
It isn't.
Jimmy Pardo, you mentioned Jimmy Pardo. He was doing it. He's one of those guys that he would do stand up when he was doing it.
So it can be different
Yeah, it can be different from show to show. And I think the crowd itself dictates a lot of it. Like sometimes, some of these shows have a big following, so it doesn't matter. Like, people are there, they're excited. You just need to keep their enthusiasm.
Yeah, I think Conan was just a fan of Jimmy Pardo, so he was do whatever you want.
Yeah, that's what
I've heard.
Just
do whatever you want.
And then
Bob Oshak is doing At Midnight.
At Midnight, I heard, right.
And he just does stand-up.
Yeah.
And it's I wouldn't mind if it were just a stand-up gig.
Right, if it was a stand-up gig, yeah.
Yeah, but a lot of them are... We're giving away T-shirts.
Right, T-shirts. And then,
and trying to keep people excited.
At Midnight brings in some people. Conan's obviously got a fan base.
Yeah.
But a lot of these shows that the opportunities come up with are a lot of, paid audiences, or it's a more, like you said, almost like Ricky Lake. Obviously, they're excited to see Ricky Lake, but she probably doesn't have the fans she did 20 years ago.
Right.
So now it's you're basically performing for other out-of-work actors.
Right, paid audiences, yeah. $15 a pop.
Yes.
Are just sitting there for hours on end with no water.
Yeah.
And poor bastards. I did Comics Unleashed, and... weirdly, more unleashed than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
Because when you watch it on television, you're like, wow, those people are super leashed.
Yes, very leashed. Yeah.
But it's one of those situations where they tape a longer set and then they cut it down.
Mm-hmm.
So Comics Unleashed. But the poor bastard who was – he was lucky because he was doing warm-up, but they have a DJ.
Right.
So there's music. He's got a good music. He's got a dude that can play something that's exciting enough that'll get people back in the – excitement times.
Yeah.
But I think he does 3 shows a day sometimes, Byron Allen.
Right, right. They'll tape those. Yeah.
Some of those audiences are there for four or five hours.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, this doesn't seem fair. It's the hardest way to make $15 in your life.
Let's say you do just stand up and you kill at that. That doesn't mean that people are going to be excited for an hour because they've just seen you laugh. Like, you need to do something else. It really needs to be a cheerleading kind of thing. Like, pump people. The guys that are great at it, they ease the crowd in. And then right before the show starts, they're at this kind of maniacal kind of excitement for what's about to happen.
Yeah.
My
I think that that's hard.
No one, to get that right vein.
Right. That's got to be a pacing. That's a learn. Talk about a learned skill. Mm-hmm. The pacing on that, where you keep them entertained, you keep them focused, they're having a really good time, and then you're like, "Are you guys ready to have a better time?
Right. Yeah.
What we've been having?
You can't. Yeah. You can't wear them out if they have too good a time.
Right.
Then the show starts, and the show's almost a little bit of a disappointment.
Right. You
don't wanna. You're just having fun and.
Right. You
got to
tape. You got to tap down your own genius.
I got to rein this in. I did. One of the ones I got in was Deal or No Deal when it first started.
Yeah.
And this is before it became a hit. So it was all paid audience members, 400 people.
Wow.
And they didn't know what, they're working out all the kinks. You know what I mean?
Right.
The angles. Are we going to have a close up every time they open the
box?
Oh,
so the
shooting was. Yeah. So it was literally a 15-hour day to get through maybe a show and a half.
Oof.
So the people there all day, and like you said, they don't the halftime they don't feed them if they get water.
Yeah,
and snacks,
bathroom breaks.
So I finally come out. They give me some candy to give these people.
Yeah,
and the people are angry at me. Like they get it. You know, that's as these good warm up guys. They yeah. somehow make this thing where they're part of the audience, and them and the audience are against everyone.
Right. We're in this together.
But they put me as, because people wanted to take bathroom breaks and
right.
food, and I didn't have the power to tell them they could.
Right.
So they perceive me as part of the crew.
I think if
someone threw candy at me. I remember they wanted candy. I finally gave them candy. I turned my back and I got
Whap.
Hit in the back. And I was like,
Who did that?
Yeah. Exactly. That's what I said. I was like, who did it? Come on, someone narc on the person. So,
right.
Like,
yeah. I have to tell you that I think if I did it, I would want to have my own PA. Like,
yeah.
Could I have a PA that could escort people, like, before people pass out and have heart attacks during the course of this event?
Yeah.
Give me a kid that can escort this person to the bathroom and back.
Like, yes.
Like,
yeah.
it's a prison sentence, that's, but they get to go to the bathroom. It's
yeah.
not that big of a freaking deal.
That's, yeah.
Also, several dozen cases of water. And,
yes. Let's keep them hydrated and keep them happy. Cause, yeah. That's the whole thing. Like, your job is to keep them happy, but sometimes they handcuff you a little bit. Like,
yeah.
Well, now I'm just the person out there answering why they have to be here so long.
I forget who does warm up for. Was it Eddie Brill who did warm up for Letterman for
Letterman?
Years?
So that's another. Yeah, talk about some of the good drama behind the scenes, and he features prominently in Dying to Do Letterman.
Oh, is he?
Yeah. So Eddie Brill,
which is your documentary on Hulu,
free on Hulu now.
And there you go. And if you go to stevemazan.com or at steve_mazan on Twitter, MAZAN, that's who I'm talking to.
You'll
Rangers,
find it. You'll
there
find
you go.
That's where we're all are. So, yeah, Eddie Brill did warm up for Letterman.
Right.
And he was also, which was a weird double-edged thing.
Oh, right. He booked
it.
He
was the booker for the comedians.
Right. For years.
Yes.
Forever, I think, right?
And then, yeah. And then he ran into some trouble. This is post everything that happens in my documentary.
Oh, is it really?
Yes.
That's unfortunate.
Because
you could have had some drama.
Yeah.
So did Eddie Brill book
trouble.
You eventually?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. He was the booker when I got on.
Okay.
So
So the culmination of this documentary is you doing 5 minutes of stand-up on Letterman?
I do 5 minutes of stand-up on Letterman.
I was on your website. I saw a picture of you standing next to Letterman on the set.
Well,
and I was there you go.
There.
It would be the worst documentary ever if there's no payoff.
The filmmaker said that.
No, nope, we don't care if you
die.
They
said there's two endings to this to this documentary.
Right.
Either you dying or you getting on Letterman.
Yep.
So you decide which one. So we were all very happy when that was the outcome.
When you neither died and you got to do a set.
And I got to do a set.
That's awesome.
But so Eddie Brill, like I said, is part of it. You know, it's great. I talked to a bunch of, you know, my love of late night.
Yep.
It shows in the movie too. I talked to Jim Gaffigan, Ray Romano, Kevin Nealon.
I saw the trailer. Yep.
A bunch of comics that have done Letterman and talking about the Jim Gaffigan, the same thing, like their love of late night TV,
mm-hmm.
what it means for a comedian to get, you know, that late night TV spot,
right.
that credit where you can, you know, Gaffigan talks about it and it like about saying like, we all have that thing when we start comedy. People are like, oh, you could be making a living at it.
Mm-hmm.
Not never going to an office, a desk job. That might be.
People still ask me
dream.
If I what my
yeah.
real job is.
Yeah, but what do you really do? Or
yeah.
like, oh, you
so
know,
do you, wait,
until you
so
get
you
that
make
late
a
night
living?
Credit, too, it's that thing like, oh, you have you been
my
on
my parents
the-
were not supportive until I got
exactly.
until I got on television.
Exactly.
And I didn't even get on fancy television. I got
right.
on like Premium Blend.
Yeah.
So, but it
oh,
was.
That's great. What a great show.
No, it was great. It was, well, if you get a chance to see that Premium Blend, the makeup person, I look like RuPaul.
Did you get it?
I'm a little tricked out, you guys. There's a lot of sparkle. A lot of sparkle.
Sparkle.
There's a giant
yeah.
hamburger behind me.
Sparkly,
they didn't,
Jackie.
They didn't tell me there was a staircase. Even when I watch that set, I think to myself, is she going to wipe out? And so... But it was, yeah. So, and then.
So it's a, yeah, it's a very important step getting a late night show, like having that credit to finally, people finally take you seriously. Like, oh, well, you must be a comedian if you've ended up on TV then.
Right.
But you could be amazed. People could just see you. You kill, you make them laugh for an hour.
No, they're amazing comics.
Oh, have you been on TV?
Couldn't
no.
buy a
oh,
break.
So what else do you do? Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
Of course. Yeah.
It's a
weird measuring stick, but
yeah.
unfortunately, yeah.
I've been meaning to have Jim Coughlin on the show.
Oh. Okay.
A guy who couldn't buy a fucking break and is a goddamn genius.
Yeah.
And, but.
Do you know Robert Duchesne? Do you ever cross paths with Robert?
Oh, I've met him.
Yeah. He's another one. I don't think he's got a TV credit, but he's literally. One of the funniest
beloved.
People I've ever met.
He is
I mean,
beloved.
Just yeah.
yeah.
And every comedian thinks, "Wow, that you."
But it's
great
it's
everything.
Weird about because I know that Regan's been on Letterman 27 times.
Yeah.
He's going to do it one more time before it's done.
Yeah.
And he also doesn't do the rest of the Hollywood thing, right?
Right.
So when sometimes if you think about like Hollywood people must just look at him and go, why don't we have any power over that guy?
Yeah, yeah.
And because he gets to do sort of, I mean, the best of what you would think would be both worlds, which would be he gets to do Letterman and he gets to fill stadiums.
Fill stadiums, yeah.
People, and so it's amazing, but it's but so, I mean, what I spend a good portion of my time ramping down my expectations. I really, you know, like I want to do Letterman. I want to do Leno. I want to do shows. I want to do Dick Cavett.
Yeah.
But I want to do shows that don't exist anymore. Right. And, the biggest waste of a time machine ever. Some people want to kill Hitler. I want to meet Dick Cavett when he's 27. And,
two birds with one stone. You could do a both. You don't have to do one or the other.
He might have been, I think he was 27 in like 1965.
So, we have to go back to young Dick Cavett show.
Dick Cavett.
When Hitler is still around.
Right. It's, someone was, thought of this, but so someone didn't know because there's footage of Hitler playing with dogs and children.
Okay, yeah,
it's a propaganda film.
Sure,
but also Hitler was a person.
Right, like
it's not like he doesn't like a German Shepherd puppy. Everyone likes a German Shepherd.
Everyone who
and then I'm sure he killed it, but because he was also a psychopath. But while he liked it, he liked it. And then all of a sudden he turns into Ultron.
That is anyway, that's the flip side of the explaining way where people like he was human, so they describe sometimes the other thing. Well, he was an amazing organizer, like, right? Like he made the trains run on time, right? Like all
right,
that stuff.
Right,
like,
right.
But those trains were going to Auschwitz. Like
right,
let's,
those trains.
Let's not,
oh my God, Dan Telfer has some joke about Jar Jar Binks being the Mussolini of the Star Wars universe. Anyway, Steve Mazan, thank you so much for doing the Dork.
Yeah,
Quest.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Sure. Everyone should go to watch Dying to Do Letterman, and go to stevemazan.com, M-A-Z-A-N, and follow him on Twitter. And thanks for listening, folks. Take care out there.
My hat, my hat, my hat. They're dancing around my hat. My hat, my hat, my hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh, my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?